Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah. All right, it's time to go. We are starting this podcast. You're going to hear it on time, but we're starting this toy department really late for us. So I don't know. We may have to breeze through some stuff this week, Kolsky. Is that right?
Yeah, maybe. But we don't have too much, and I know we have a lot to say about one thing.
That is correct. I want to start, though, by talking a little bit about something that you watched that I didn't. Which was Disney Plus, right? You were currently a Disney Plus or Disney Plus, as some say, subscriber. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
I sure am.
And how is that working for you? What was week one of the Disney Plus experience like?
You know, very smooth. I have no complaints. I guess some people had problems. I did not. I've only so far put it on like my iPad and my PlayStation, but everything's worked. No streaming delays. Honestly, the only streaming stuff I have issues with so far on a semi-regular basis is HBO Go.
Hmm. Are you watching like new original content on Disney Plus so far, or is it just
Not yet, the
vast catalog of things that they own?
It's well, other than The Mandalorian, I haven't tried any of the other new shows. There are some other new shows that I feel like I'm going to like. There are shows that I watch with my wife because she likes them and I can tolerate them. You know, there's some stuff she likes that I can't really tolerate, and I don't mean that in a necessarily pejorative way. It's my own problem. But like, she likes all this British mystery stuff and like old British TV that I just can't deal with. So, you know, we watch The Great British Bake Off together and other things that I can enjoy. And there's some weird stuff in that vein in Disney Plus's originals that, you know, I think might work in that zone. There's like a show where Kristen Bell gathers people who did musicals together in high school, like much later in life, and redoes them.
I thought you were going to be like, there's a show where Kristen Bell plays an animated ice princess. And
no, but that's the other thing, man, is like, it's not just the animated ice princess. It's everything that's ever been on any Disney channel, on any Disney movie screen. It's.
Yeah. By the way, I actually know nothing about Frozen. Does she play an animated ice princess in that movie? I was really just guessing.
I haven't seen Frozen, but that's my basic understanding. Okay. Well, she's an animated princess of some kind.
All right.
And there's ice involved.
I just assumed she was frozen because of the title of the movie. I don't know.
Clearly someone or something is frozen.
Yes, me, currently in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So how much did this set you back?
It's not much. It's like $7. Oh no, and less. I just did the full year because it's $6.99 a month or $69.99 for the year.
All right, so $70 gets me in. I have a Hulu subscription, so I should just cancel that, right?
And then no, because then it would be more. That the 60 is just pure Disney Plus is $70 for the year.
Oh, so the bundle is more.
The bundle is more, but it comes with Hulu and ESPN Plus,
right?
And it's a good bit less than paying for all three.
Because I do
which I am currently doing because it's a little more complicated for me.
It's not going to be healthy to give me this much access to European soccer, but I'm probably just going to do the bundle and cancel.
Honestly,
my
Hulu. ESPN Plus is really great anyway because it just gives you the ability to watch all the games, all the live ESPN content at any time on delay, you know?
Yeah.
It's if you're someone who likes to watch a lot of sports, it makes it easier. And like, while I hear your point about how you'll be watching, you know, Fenerbahce play CSKA Moscow at 3 a.m., I also would say you'll also be able to put that game on demand at 5 p.m. while you're cooking dinner.
It's great. I root for a team in the Europa League, and they play all these ridiculously random teams on Thursday morning sometimes, and you know that's not super convenient for me. So, yeah. Anyway, I guess I'm going to get Disney Plus, which means I guess next week maybe we'll try to talk about The Mandalorian, which for some reason I didn't write down in the homework. But let's talk about some things
that is weird.
We did watch this week.
That feels Freudian to me.
It does a little bit. You want to start? Because I have an inordinate number of thoughts on the challenge. So let's start with Jojo Rabbit. What do you think? And then we can kind of just...
Yeah, I think we got to save the challenge for last, because at some point we're just going to have to say, all right, we can't talk about any more. The show's over.
Yeah, exactly. So okay. Let's jump in. Let's jump in on the Jojo Rabbit. For those of you who are not familiar with this film, it's the Taika Waititi... did I say that right? Taika Waititi?
Yeah, I think so.
Comedy... I guess just comedy would be the way you would describe this.
Let me ask you a question.
About a boy in World War II. Go ahead, ask it. Ask me a question.
This is ham-handed, understandably. It's not the best comparison. But is Life is Beautiful a comedy?
I am not entirely sure that I ever saw Life is Beautiful.
Oh, really?
Man. Maybe I did, but I would say that if I did, I've retained nothing of it at this point. Like, I mean, okay. I know that it's, you know, Roberto Benigni and it right. won an Oscar, and that's pretty much all I remember about it. And he's right. kind of like a clown-ish guy, right? Like, he's sort of like, well, I remember, there's a vision in my head of him, like, dancing.
He is often funny in that movie, and that movie is more serious and has less laughs than this one. But fundamentally... I guess the question is, what makes something a comedy as opposed to a drama with laughs?
Yeah. And look, this is you could definitely, like, if you wanted to say to me, I think this is a drama with laughs, like, it'd be hard for me to necessarily argue with that.
And I'm not sure it matters. Like, I don't know how deep we need to go down this road, but I'm just saying, if we're asking that question, it's a tough one to answer.
It does matter to me to this point in that I really feel like, and certainly on paper, like, this movie should not work. You know, like, I had a friend randomly complain to me about it, like Holocaust comedy, like, come on. You know what I mean? Like, and I...
Someone who had not seen
it. Who had not seen it, yeah. And I understand right. that impulse, for sure.
Two things. First of all, of course I understand that impulse. I think I had that impulse to a degree. I think I trusted Taika Waititi as a Jewish man.
Oh, he's a Jewish man? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And as someone who, you know, is an excellent filmmaker, I trusted him to handle this well. So I think maybe I was able to quell that feeling.
Yeah.
That being said, he's half Maori and sort of half, or at least a quarter Jewish. You know, he's not like I don't know if he had a bar mitzvah or anything.
You went
to
the Wikipedia page at the same time that I did, huh?
Yeah, but I didn't want to say it wrong, but yeah. I basically knew.
Yes, yeah, I didn't know that. I just saw the Maori.
And so I trusted him. That being said, I know some things that you're triggered by. I don't know how triggering Holocaust stuff is for you. In my old age, it has become incredibly triggering for me. Mm. So there was some fear associated with that, and there were a lot of tears for me during this movie, and I'm welling up a little bit right now just thinking about Scarlett Johansson's performance, which I thought was exceptional.
Yes. Well, as you know, I mean, I'm well on record as a person that cries in movies. So, but I saw this one on a date. Which I think kept the waterworks away. I don't know. I didn't cry. Which is not to say that I didn't find it emotionally moving and sad, because I did. And the thing that I was going to kind of say about, like, the fact that this movie shouldn't work on paper is that I felt like it handled the jarring tonal shifts almost effortlessly, like, it seamlessly, like, it all really works.
It is at times as silly as What We Do in the Shadows, and at other times as heartbreaking as something like Life is Beautiful, which is just a tear fest if you ever see that.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty unbelievable thing to pull off. And as much as I did think Taika Waititi was a tremendous filmmaker, he hadn't really had to do any serious emotional work in his major filmmaking.
Yeah. Although now I'm reading his Wikipedia, he wrote the screenplay for Moana, which I feel like probably had some serious emotional stuff in it.
But I've seen Moana.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it has this emotional stuff like a cartoon. And, you know, Thor Ragnarok has emotional stuff like a Thor Ragnarok. Yeah. But this is different.
I thought of the scene where the Gestapo come to their home, you know, the Gestapo led by Stephen Merchant. And
the goofy Gestapo of Stephen Merchant. Yeah.
And like, to me, it was such a good sort of microcosm of this movie, because that scene is like terrifying and hilarious simultaneously, you know,
and
which,
you know,
is,
you know,
when
what
do you
else?
See that, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe this says more about me than the movie, and I can't speak to Taika Waititi's intentions, but it's not just America where this sort of horrifying silliness is a very real now problem. And I think this movie, while obviously exaggerating the silliness of anything that was happening during these times, I think this movie makes a good point, whether it means to or not, about the danger of accepting evil in the guise of silliness.
I would agree with that. It certainly at times sort of jogged and I don't think it beats you over the head with it at all. And maybe honestly, it's just me. But you certainly come away with the impression of like, oh man, it's not so far fetched that something like this could happen now. You know, as sort of as silly as they sort of make a lot of the misinformation, you know, that the Jews sort of traffic in. Like, it doesn't seem all that far off from the things that people say now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it really doesn't. Obviously that's deeply horrifying.
Yes. Yeah, no, it doesn't make it even more terrible. A couple of things that I sort of wrote down. I really thought the child actors of this movie did incredible work.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Not just the lead, whose name I don't have right in front of me, but I is obviously excellent. But like
the kid with the glasses,
he's so great,
unbelievable, unbelievable. To be able to strike that tone, and I think we got to give a decent amount of credit to direction for all of that. I don't know how a kid of that age strikes that sort of. You know what he reminded me of a little bit is the kid from Jerry Maguire.
Yeah,
but this is a much harder job, you know?
Yep, I agree. Like,
the human head weighs 8 pounds is some good stuff, but it doesn't come with the context, and there's not this sort of tone to pull off. And I thought that kid, yeah, you're right, he was unbelievable.
Archie Yates is his name, and he doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so I'm going to guess he hasn't done a lot of work.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I wonder if I would imagine some of the side actors were, Australia or New Zealand kids.
Yeah, probably.
But honestly, Sam Rockwell, Scarlett Johansson, Taika Waititi himself, like everyone is great in this.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, Roman Griffin Davis is the kid who plays Jojo. Like, he holds his own with all of these heavyweight actors. You know what I mean? In scene after scene, you know, and Scarlett Johansson is,
you watch enough Black Widow, you start to forget, I think. I mean, who's better? Like, who's better than Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know.
If you sort of take the everything with a budget over $200 million off her Wikipedia, the diversity of parts she plays with, like, she's really incredible.
Yeah. I think my favorite Scarlett Johansson performance is a voiceover role, actually.
Really?
Her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's magnificent. Absolutely. In that.
Yeah. She really is. Yeah, and she's taken, in addition to doing blockbusters, she's taken bizarre roles. Did you ever see Under the Skin, I think it was called? Is it Under the Skin? That might not be the right.
I kind of feel like I did. It's like a sci-fi one, right?
Yeah, Under Skin? Under the Skin? Yeah, Under the Skin. Yeah, she's like a alien, I guess?
Yeah.
It's very bizarre, Jonathan Glazer movie, but like, yeah, she takes weird movies. She takes risks, and she's rarely anything but exceptional.
Yeah. And, this was great. And I thought the, you know, if you haven't tuned out of this yet and you're wondering if we're going to spoil things, I'm going to spoil something now. The way that, they handled her death scene was just like perfect and really touching, I thought. You know what I mean?
And perfect for the movie that it was in.
Yeah.
This movie never loses track of what it is in either direction. It remains you're never able to shake the horror of the broad circumstances, and it never forgets that it's ultimately a parody.
Yeah. It's really enjoyable, well done, and this is a recommend for me, and
strong recommend.
You know, I may need to go see the freaking Thor movies.
Honestly, you probably can just see Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, he did do both of them. He just did Ragnarok.
There's three, and he only did the third one.
Oh, great. Yeah, of course.
But he is doing the fourth, I believe.
All right. Well,
and Natalie Portman was so moved by the third that she's coming back.
Oh, good. Look at that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Taika Waititi at this point.
No doubt.
All right. Before we get to challenge, we had one more thing on the homework list, which was Hasan Minhaj's Patriot Act. I guess here would be the point that I would make about this, and feel free to tell me if you have more to add, is that this episode was good. The new season was the episode's about mental health.
Yeah.
I find myself now, 5 days on from watching it on Sunday, struggling to remember a lot about it. And I think the problem for a show like this, and I think, you know, John Oliver's show can have the same problem, although I have to say that the most recent John Oliver that aired this Sunday is exceptional,
unbelievably good.
But that reminded me watching that, and then the Hasan as well, sort of reminded me that like it's actually kind of been a long time since I was like, dude, did you see John Oliver on Sunday? You know what I mean? And I think it's difficult for these shows not to get to a place where they settle into just kind of a consistently good and sort of slightly informative, slightly funny place, as opposed to like when you first see them and they kind of feel hugely impactful and transcendent. You know what I mean? And I feel like both of these shows have kind of just been in that, like, it's never bad. Like, the shows are all good, but like, it's just sort of hard to be, you know, oh my God, that show eviscerated this topic the other night, even though they continue to be like well-researched and have laughs. You know what I mean?
I think it's just it becomes a. This is horrifying, and it's not that. We have comedians saying things that we need politicians to say, and ultimately, when that ceases to be surprising at any level, and it ceases to have any real impact for the most part, it loses its teeth.
Yeah. It just becomes a little bit of wallpaper, and that's, I don't think it's our fault as much as the show's fault. You know what
they
I mean?
I would say it's all 100% our fault.
Yeah.
I mean, our broad, you know, I'm not sure there's anything the consumers of these shows can do, but this gets into so outside the toy department and my like depressed view of American society that I don't know that there's much point continuing with it. But
I'll tell you what they can do is stage massive Broadway spectacle dance performances that end in the middle of Times Square.
And I would say if John Oliver seems less rote than Hasan Minhaj, it's because so far he does a better job of those sort of actions.
Yeah.
To make it feel more impactful. But ultimately, this is a losing fucking battle, man. And it's just depressing if you think about it. And on a level, as incredible as this episode of John Oliver was, and I totally agree, he tried to create attention. He tried to do a thing that was valuable in addition to making jokes. It just makes me think about how nothing's actually getting done and how bad the government situation is and how hopeless I am about meaningful future change. And that doesn't mean that a Democrat won't eventually win or just a more respectable human won't be the president again. I think that will happen sooner or later.
Yeah, I mean, look,
I think about this stuff and like I think about the mental if you think about the mental health thing that John Oliver went through.
That Hasan Minhaj went through?
Or sorry, that Hasan Minhaj went through. And what are the meaningful ways to change? And the point he kind of made, I thought, well, was the one action you and I and everyone can take is if and when mental health services are denied inappropriately, fight and scream and make noise and draw attention. But that is not that's an avenue towards getting your ruling overturned, yeah. Not an avenue towards meaningful change.
Right.
I don't know that there is an avenue towards meaningful change that doesn't include radical reconstruction of the entire American government.
Well, I think you hit on something there in terms of we're relying on comedy shows to do a lot of heavy lifting now. To me, that's more of an indictment of our press at the moment. And just sort of the conversation that we have.
Is it? Because here's the problem with that. And you're right.
And I mean it's that collectively as opposed to any individual members of said press.
I know. But how far do you want to pull that string? Because the press is a response to the audience.
Yeah. Well, I agree. What we're getting into right now is the good night and good luck. And that yes. that we are living in a society that's the effect of a press that is now completely driven by profit motive informational value.
When the press is asked to operate in a pure, well, relatively straight up capitalist model, what are they to do but serve the audience?
It's true.
And if the audience's appetite becomes far more for drama and horse races than meaningful information and discussion, who is to blame? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Man, I have some more points on this, and they're all really non-toy department-y. And that's,
yeah,
we can't
really take this any further.
And it's kind of to your point, it's also like when I hear you say capitalistic society, even though I agree with everything that you're saying – and I think it's a valuable point. I sort of in my head, I'm going like, oh, man, I can hear people like flipping to some other podcast. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
And that makes me want to go right. And that's the same problem that the press has. Right. You know,
yep.
So
and it's the same problem you and I mean, you less because you're not in a talk zone right now. But it's certainly the problem I run into. I don't even it's not fair to call it a problem. It's the situation I'm in on a daily basis with a radio show that speaks to a ton of people. And I have certain opinions that I would love to share with those people that are not appropriate for the forum.
You know, one of the things, if I'm talking to like a person who's, you know, not connected to the business about radio, you know, and you're at a party or something and you have that conversation about, well, why are DJs, you know, why are they always so hyped up? Why is it, you know, why is everything so yuck, yuck, yuck all the time? And I'm like, well, imagine if you held all your conversations and the people that you were talking to had the ability to snap their fingers and all of a sudden be in another room. Like, wouldn't that change the way that you presented the information if you knew people could just leave so easily the second that they weren't interested in what you were telling them?
And you wouldn't even know.
Yeah. So
You're blind.
And you're blind to it, yeah. And so, like, that is the radio person's dilemma. And so, of course, that's going to affect the way that you speak and everything you do, both content-wise and tonally, is sort of an effort to grab their attention, you know? And that's kind of the way it has to be. And I think, you know, like, the kind of the guests that you have that come on, the bands that we have that come on, like, oh, God, radio guys, like, that's a thing that they don't really understand, like that kind of constant pressure, you know? So
they don't think, then they don't think about it that way.
Yeah.
And I get it, because nobody wants to think about it that way. But if you're in charge of content, that is how you have to think about it if you want to stay in charge of content.
Right. Yeah.
For anything. Any content producer, that's just how it works.
Right. And that's how people use it. All right. Well, now we've gotten into the sausage and how it's made.
Yeah, let's put that. Let's close the doors to the sausage factory and get back to entertainment.
Yeah. Speaking of entertainment, another delightful episode of The Challenge, of which I have like 17,000 notes on.
Yeah.
Do you want to give people a rough summary of what the hell happened last night? Maybe we can go from there.
Oh man. So, for those following along, excuse me, with The Challenge, we had a marriage proposal on last week's episode, and that has been a source of controversy, in part because the two people who got engaged also turncoated in the game. And the other part of this that's important right now is we're in a team game, you know, USA versus UK broadly, with some turncoats and some exceptions. And there is both that team game and another alliance team game happening. And really, there's only one real alliance that I think should for now be referred to as the alliance.
Yeah,
and essentially
the Paul Akkari alliance, and then it's kind of everybody else, right? Either you're in with them or you're not.
I think you just said Paul Akkari, which is hilarious.
Yeah. I did.
and not totally inappropriate, but yes, the Kara and Paulie.
I didn't mean to, but now I'm glad I did.
Yeah. Which I think actually the Kari Paula alliance is a good name for the alliance, but shorthand, the alliance. And what the alliance is doing is gathering numbers on both teams so that no matter what happens, they control the votes of who goes into elimination.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Borg that's just sort of gradually sucking up people.
That's right.
And this week, like CT was that person in the most obvious way, which made it great.
And there's an element of, like, you know, the Warriors broke the NBA. Like, there's an element of the Alliance is breaking the challenge right now.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the thing that I wrote down, right? Like, do you feel like the game really needs, you know, TJ, it really, you know, the producers, to step in and supply a twist in the rules at this point?
Okay, well,
because
so
I feel like it's getting roped.
That brings me to one of my notes, which is what's probably the most I shouldn't say that. There's so many incredibly ridiculous things on this show. But one of the most ridiculous things about the way this is playing out is how much people talk about the ability to, quote, run a final.
Yeah.
When we don't know what the final is going to be at all. Like, they're acting like we're going to just do last season's final again. You don't know. I mean, yeah, there's probably some running,
and
but like
I don't. I think I feel like the word. It's weird because this is an interesting point that you kind of hit on here. Because everyone does say run a final, and I feel like some people take that word run very literally. Like D's like, what are you talking about? I run every day. I can run. And then I think other people mean that in the, you know, survive sense of the word, right? Because
you don't know what
it's going to be, but you do know it's going to test your endurance. That much you know.
Well, okay, it's going to test your endurance, but most of the stuff tests your endurance. What is it really probably going to test? Let's be honest. More than anything else, what do these challenges test?
Your ability to absorb pain and your ability to absorb pain and discomfort. Is that right?
Basically, yeah. Like it's toughness.
Yeah.
It's toughness and commitment. And even last year's final, like, which, yes, was also enough to break you physically. I think it was a bigger for these people who are almost to a T now that Esther's gone. Was that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that Esther's gone, these people are all in incredible shape, relatively speaking. Some are in better shape than others, but these are workout people, all of them. And
well, I have some questions about D, which are obviously shared by some people on the show.
Fair enough, but like, she's made it this far, and there's certainly no guarantee that the final is going to be a specific test of running or swimming endurance that will break her.
Also Kaylee, by the way. Kaylee really seems to be, like, sliding under the radar in terms of that. Yeah.
There may be a couple people who are sliding for right now, but the point I'm trying to make is all this talk about how can you hope to win a final with someone weak on your team. A, you don't even know if the teams are going to still be together when you get to the final.
Yes.
And B, you don't know what the final's going to be. So the fact that so many people seem to be basing their decisions on that is crazy. And I think fundamentally, in the same way that if you're the Warriors, you go sign KD every time, if you're Paulie and Kara and you have the ability to form an alliance that breaks the game in your favor, of course you do that. And so I guess the answer to your original question is, yeah, TJ and the producers should step in and twist the game in some way that debilitates or at least changes the rules.
I mean, the obvious way is that at some point it just becomes every man for himself, right?
Either every man for himself or I don't know. But that's the point. That's why this is the challenge and not the NBA, is
that the rules can change in the middle all the time and people sort of expect that.
They can do anything they want at any time. And right now, I don't think there has been a reason to step in yet.
Yeah, although I think if you have more of these things where people are clear and obviously just throwing challenges.
Well, you know how TJ hates quitters, and you can see his disappointment. So
this is disgust. Yeah, although did you enjoy the way that CT threw the challenge? It pissed everyone hilarious. Off, but I did find it to be hilarious.
And that's my point, is while the people in the game have started to lose their shit, I don't think we've gotten to a point where it's become bad TV because of it. In fact, I think it's mostly been good TV because of it. And I don't know how to say it other than, based on the four or whatever seasons of the challenge that I've watched, there is no one I'm aware of in the world I trust more to know when to pull the trigger on the right twist than the producers of this show.
Oh yeah, no, they'll be ready.
And so I'm not going to suggest that the alliance has become a problem for the TV show, until it's actually a problem. And right now, it is peak entertainment. And slight spoilers, but I mean, if you're not watching at this point, you probably turned the pod off anyway.
Agreed.
Last night, when everyone in the house managed to act like an adult and put on a nice piece of clothing and toast to the couple that just got engaged, Cara Maria literally yelled at the camera about how it was fake. And then sat it out and wandered around the house in a bathrobe. And the way they cut it was unbelievable.
Yeah. Clearly, the producers, wanted to show Cara Maria. And it's like, it's one of those things, like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh man, this is going to be an unbelievable segment on the reunion show, right? Like,
unbelievable.
Everyone's going to shit all over her and it's going to be delightful. But like, I can't believe, like, in the moment when she's talking out loud about how this is a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Like, nobody was like, what the F are you talking about? Like,
no one called her on her shit.
Even if they had already gotten married in Las Vegas or something before, like, it's not like their marriage is fake or that their love is fake. So, like,
no.
Go out there and, like, celebrate these people.
I don't think that's the case at all.
Yeah.
And by the way, her conspiracy theory does not make more sense than, like, the normal theory. The idea that like, if it was all staged, why would they save it for? Are you saying the challenge was staged?
Yeah.
Because why would you save it for? If it was staged, you would do it when you knew it could happen, not after an elimination where Jordan might get kicked out. You're gonna have him do it after he loses. Like, that didn't make any sense. I think the guy literally did it with a for the ring in his pocket and surprised her.
Yep.
The producers may have known, but that doesn't make it fake. That just makes it a reality show. Like, is your relationship fake, Kara, because you're on a reality show?
A little bit. Probably a little bit.
So, like, me, that's what it feels like to me is projection.
Yeah. Man, that was one of the questions I had written down to ask you was how hard does she suck? Because like, is it really hard or like so hard?
No, it's funny. My first experience with Cara Maria, I think, was on the first season where she and Kyle were fighting all the time. You know?
Yeah.
And I kind of was like, man, he's kind of a dick. And not that he's not a dick, but as time has gone on, like, it becomes harder and harder to side with Cara Maria.
Yeah. I really. I am looking forward to the day that I assume will come eventually when you are able to dig back into like some of the early seasons of the show. Like if you watch her first couple of seasons on the show, like it's like she's just a completely different person, completely different.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and man, there's been a lot of men running through Cara Maria's. I don't even mean that in a bad way because you've been on the show for a lot of years. You know what I mean?
We've watched her live a lot of life.
Yeah, we've watched her live a lot of life. And, you know, some of that I think is taking a toll on her. Like, in the beginning, by the way, she, you know, like she was never in bad shape, but she also wasn't in this kind of shape, too, which I think is sort of interesting.
She's an insane. The only person who appeared to be in better shape than her is Jenny. And that elimination, like, Tori climbed so high up my challenge, not even power rankings, because I already knew she was near the top of that, but like personal enjoyment rankings. The way she trucked that Terminator woman, first of all, she called her Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then she trucked her. She Brian Urlacher effing demolished her. That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I think it's the best elimination I've ever seen.
It was like, you know, one of those James Harden push you to the ground, cross you over so it looks like you fall, glare at you while you're on the ground, shoot the three, walk away kind of performances.
Yeah.
Or like, did you see Trae Young dribble the ball through the guy's legs the other night and then hit the three and then look back? Like, it was like that. Because not only was it an incredible display, but then, like, an incredible display of trash talk to both teams, really. Like,
to a bunch of scared ladies standing on steps.
Yeah. Just, that was an impressive, a non, like, winning, you know, a non-championship winning performance of the challenge as I've seen in quite some time. Like, that was amazing.
Amazing. Good for her. Now here I think is the next thing for us to discuss. What can Tori and Jordan do? And the way I thought about it was, okay, CT is not super committed to the alliance. He just sided with the numbers to save himself, right?
Yeah.
And basically they were numbers that were going to win anyway. But after what they just did to D, could Tori and Jordan convince D and CT that if we go against the alliance, if we can win as a team, we can control the British team?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they,
because I don't see any other hope for these people.
Could they? Yes, somebody needs to sort of take over the Brit team. You know what I mean?
But Joss and Rogan, Kaylee is playing to save herself, and clearly the alliance is the way to do that.
Right.
Joss and Rogan are just cast in with Paulie for some reason, and it's hard to understand why at this point.
Well, and look, certainly if this episode proved anything, it's that Rogan, at the very least, Josh, and I say this with only a mild amount of shade because he seems like a fine fellow. Josh is a box of rocks when it comes to playing this game, right?
Like, yes. Like, yes, he is.
He is not masterminding a damn thing.
No, he's Rogan, just trying to be a nice guy who's very strong and fast.
Rogan, this was a rough episode for Rogan, to say the least.
They threw a challenge to Torch D, a challenge they easily could have won, that like anyone could have won. You know, it was up in the air. They threw it to Torch D and didn't do it.
And not only that, they did this not really knowing if they had the votes to put her in.
I don't get it.
It's mind-boggling to me. They already decided to throw the challenge. They hadn't worked out the deal with Pauly yet, and right. They didn't know if Pauly would be able to follow through before the guy makes the decision to sell out his girlfriend.
And I while I recognize the honesty and kind of respect it of CT playing rock, paper, scissors to throw the challenge, I also have to say, that's a terrible move. Yeah. Why not fake it?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been that hard to just lose in a way that would have flown under the radar.
You're a fat fuck. Just fall off the thing.
Yeah. Yep. 100%. You know, don't go first. Go last. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or I say you're a fat fuck with no malice. Like, I'd fall right off that thing.
Right.
Go ahead. It's easy to do. You don't have to do yoga poses and play rock, paper, scissors.
Right. You certainly could have been the Brit defender, right? Like, that would have been a reasonable position for you to take and then completely throw that, right? In a way that, you know, oh, man, he knocked me off right away, right? Like, there were many other less obvious ways to do this.
I respect the honesty, but there's a reason when people point shave in sports, they don't just throw the ball out of bounds every time they touch it.
Yeah, agreed. And look, honestly, I can respect Rogan looking at the game, understanding that he needed to make a difficult but cold-hearted decision, and then doing it, but it just seemed like he executed it so poorly from like start to finish that it completely blew up in his face. And CT had to be the one that's like, yeah, we're going to do this, but I'm going to try to handle it with some dignity. You know what I mean?
Right. He's supposed to be the experienced game player. What the hell is he doing? And then here's the other part of the D thing. I understand cold-hearted decision-making. I don't understand the naivete that you could do it without her ever finding out. Because even if these people could keep their mouth shut, which obviously they can't, but even if they could, it's on TV!
Right. Well, I mean, look, I think he knew she was going to find out. I think in his mind she was going to find out at the elimination thing. So,
well, she was going to find out that she was going in, but I don't think she was going to find out he was the driver of the bus. So my point is, if you're going to do that, the only chance you have to not like completely ruin anything you have, even like the remotest piece of like respect, is to say, listen, we made a decision as a team, like, we're going to throw you in. I hope you come back, but like, we're too late in the game to make decisions based off personal relationships and try to sell it to her ahead of time. And if that doesn't work, so be it. But like, you're just lighting everything on fire with trying to do stuff behind people's backs
100%.
In a house with 10 people or whatever.
The other thing I don't understand is like, okay, so if you've made the decision that you're going to throw her overboard, like, why not just work it out to do that in the Brit nomination portion of the process rather than somehow involving Tory in all this? Like, that to me was the hugest mistake, is like, you as like the... And by the way,
well, and that's where
as cold as the general Brit nomination ceremonies have been, and they've been, some of them have been brutal. Like,
no, just, all right, let's do this. Who's for Tory? Hands up.
Everyone's hit. All right, thanks, bye. Like,
that was unbelievable. And here's the next part of this. Clearly, that's the alliance making the Tory decision.
Yeah.
Because whether Pauly and Kara specifically instructed them to do that or not, the reason they do that is because they know Jordan and Tori are ultimately always going to be against the numbers that they're working with. And even if the more prudent move would be to create their own numbers on their own team instead of like operating based on who's in control of the other team, they have organized themselves in a way that that's not what they're doing.
Yeah. Can we talk about Leo for a minute? Because I'm worried about Leo.
Leroy, you mean?
Leroy, yeah, excuse me.
I think, okay, so in addition to my wife calling Cara Maria the C word and not Cara while we were watching this last night, I said multiple times, and now it has become like a refrain of mine while watching this show, man, Leroy gets no respect. Like, Zach, who is becoming one of my favorites.
That epic toast from him, by the way. I didn't see that coming. Like,
not only that, yeah, the epic toast, but also he's by far the most like sensible and understandable person in the, you know, confessionals or one-on-ones or whatever you call them. And he also is a hilarious shade thrower. Like, if he doesn't think you're good at the game, he just crushes you. The way he's after Ninja is hilarious to me.
Yeah. This is a weird analogy because I like Zach, and you know I don't feel great about this person, but he is in many ways the Kevin Garnett of this game, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
But he also but then he gives a moving toast, which I think is the reason why you should like Kevin Garnett, because he also would give a moving toast.
I don't disagree with that part of it. I still don't like Kevin Garnett, though.
But he keeps saying these things like in the mud challenge, he literally said, like, if appearances could kill, everyone but me on my team would be dead. And I'm like, what the hell, man? Leroy looks pretty cut up to me.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Josh is soft as you can imagine, and Paulie is a tiny man, but why does everyone diss Leroy? He's obviously very good at this.
Yes and no. He's a many time participant and zero time champion.
He's a physical specimen, is what I'm saying. He's a bonehead, and he's constantly caught between like warring factions. But he's physically, he should be getting more respect.
Agreed. But he is, man. And look, he has ascended to a leadership position on the USA team, if not a leadership position in the alliance. And he is just so in over his head in the middle of this girl drama between.
Oh my God, it's so fun.
Nani and Cam. And they are so much more, like, he's just not equipped to handle the next level girl shade that's happening around him. And
not
it is kind of hilarious.
At all.
Yeah.
Not the slightest. The thing about Leroy is he is completely in over his head, just like playing the social game in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, although I will say he brought some reason to the conversation with Zach and God, whoever else it was, Nani, where he was just like, yeah, guys, I'm trying to stay alive. Yes, that's what I'm trying to do. And I cast in with the guys who are going to keep me alive for now. Sorry.
Yeah, but that just got him in trouble with Cam. And
but that's the thing is, ultimately, that is, again, honest and real. But, dude, you've been doing this too long to think that honesty and realism are your friends right now.
Yeah. And by the way, I thought Jordan had a really actually smart observation about Leroy in this game, in that he's basically been picking the wrong team in pretty much every challenge he's ever been on.
Yeah.
That's why he never wins. And I was like, you know what? That is really right. And I would also say his instincts in that Cam-Nani fight were decent and like, let's just go to bed. But you could also tell that was the only card he had to play. That was it.
Yeah. So like, just I think you should go back to your room and we should all be cool is like a beautiful pipe dream, Leroy. Yeah. But come on, dog.
Yeah. You guys know you're all going to wake up tomorrow and all this is still going to be there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It is. Man, this is the best. This is in a world where we – love the drama of sports, this is a great sport.
Yep.
Like, it is both physically demanding and impressive to watch at times, and also filled with schadenfreude and drama.
Yeah, it's like watching a sport, but then there's also like, what if the conversation around it was also a sport? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
which is amazing. All right, I have a couple of questions for you. Sorry, go ahead. Hold on.
I was just going to say, it's why your Kevin Garnett analogy is so perfect, because he made the mental game as much a sport as anybody.
Yeah. God, if this show makes me like Kevin Garnett, I don't know if that's going to do for my worldview.
Chicago wins again.
All right, couple of questions for you. One is, who is your episode MVP?
Wow. It's got to be Tori, right?
Yeah, I had Cam's boobs for a while, but then it clearly became Tori. Yeah.
Cam had some epic, like, lines in this one.
She did some epic lines as well.
Other people.
I'm not serious about her boobs being the MVP, by the way.
Yeah, I know. But they were out there today.
Yeah. And then
that was the thing my wife commented on without me bringing up.
Yeah.
Partially because of whatever the hell that thing was she was wearing for the tribunal.
Very bizarre. Yeah, the tribunal thing was, hey, everybody, here they are. Yeah. How much money, and I'm going to need an exact figure, would I need to pay you right now to watch an entire episode of Floribama Shore?
How long it is?
I think it's at least an hour.
I want to say like 1,000, but honestly, 100 would probably do it.
See, I think I would need like, I feel like 350 is the minimum for me for that. Yeah.
Well, but you work at a higher pay rate than I do, so you know, it's all relative. Like, right. I'm just trying to think about what I know, because it would be work, right? And it would be work that I like less than the job I do on a daily basis, yeah, for sure. But $100 is a pretty good hourly rate.
It's true. That is true. That is true. It is a pretty good hourly rate. I feel like, DJ appearance money.
Support, you know, like I can't turn my nose up at $100 for an hour of work.
Man, that'd be a rough hour.
It would. I not only have no interest, I actively desire not to watch that show.
Yeah, I feel like the public must feel that way too, considering like how hard they pumped it for this particular one. Like,
I feel like there were commercial breaks where there were ads for nothing other than Floribama Shore.
Yeah, like, the amount of times I have heard that girl go, I don't know if I'm hungover or if I'm still a little bit fucked up. You know, like. Yeah.
Like, oh, you mean that feeling everyone had when they were 19 and drinking too much?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. It's probably get both. Guess what?
Southern.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That show's going to be terrible. All right. That's probably should wrap it up for this week. Let's go ahead and do homework.
That was great. That was a great final question
today. Thank you. Let's talk about homework. We've got another relatively light slate. It's weird because all these TV networks are popping up, and platforms are popping up, I guess would be the right word, and yet there doesn't seem to be all that many shows.
Or any shows that feel necessary.
Correct. Which may be an issue in and of itself. But I'm going to do this Disney trial thing, so we're going to watch The Mandalorian. You've already done that, I'm guessing.
I've watched one episode, but I think it'll be nice to get a couple under our belt before we talk about it.
Do they drop a whole season, or is it like a weekly thing?
Week to week, I think.
Okay. And then we're going to try to go to the movies. Sorry, what were you saying?
I don't think I've checked today, okay, but at the time I watched it, only one was available.
We're going to try to go to the movies and see Ford versus Ferrari.
I feel like this is a... Maybe this is wrong. I don't know. But in my head, in my heart, it feels like this is a movie that the sort of which we used to get all the time, a movie with two big movie stars about a famous thing from the past that they seem to be really interested in for some reason. And I don't feel like, but it's not, you know, an explosive budget film, I don't think. No. We don't get as many of these movies anymore. I don't know that I've always been super excited about them in the past, but I think the rarity of this sort of thing has made me more interested.
Agreed. I also am now feeling at the point where, like, it's almost good to financially support movies that just star to adults largely talking about things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we're going to do that. There's a Hulu show called Dollface.
Yes, with the great Kat Dennings. Kat Dennings has always been on my, like, underused list.
Agreed.
I find her, she's just one of these people that I find sort of magnetic on screen, and I don't feel like she's had opportunity to, like, stretch her wings and do interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, I do think that she, you know, she spent a lot of years in with a regular commitment in Chuck Lorre land, which I'm sure paid very well, and
no shade,
but probably limited her opportunities. Yeah, I don't necessarily mean that in shade. I'm guessing it limited some of her film career opportunity for sure.
Agreed. No, I wasn't saying you meant it negatively. I'm just saying I'm happy to see her get to do something different.
And better than that, because that's hopefully
better than that.
That show is like bottom of the barrel Chuck Lorre. You know what I mean?
It's hard for me to distinguish between
When you were like, I'd much rather be watching Two and a Half Men, that's not good. And then there's a Netflix movie starring Alicia Vikander called Earthquake Bird that we're going to watch as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of in the, what's that you say, Alicia Vikander sounds good.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we'll see. I mean, I don't know much about it. It's a thriller mystery. We'll see.
Comes out tomorrow. Probably by the time you're listening to this, it'll be out. So, and that, I would say, is pretty much it for this week, yeah?
Okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.